going to monitor how this sounds behind me. Okay, it's not too bad. He's moving like, I don't even know. Sounds like a waterfall. Hi, everyone.
Hey, squad.
How's everybody doing?
Guys all hungover from Halloween.
Yeah, today is November 1st, 2024, day after Halloween. So it's Hallows Eve.
Ooh. It's the first day of your birthday month.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But it's still Scorpio season, so everyone stay on your toes. Oh, have you finished? Nobody wants this.
Yes, I hate her.
What a couple of assholes. When they go to the bar mitzvah and they're like, "Woo!" dancing to Dua Lipa, I was like, you are fucking 40. You don't go to a party you're not invited to. It's not like...
You can't go to a family event like that. Like, it's expensive. It's basically a fucking wedding.
Yeah.
You can't just invite yourselves. It's no. Catered.
That was so rude. And that took me out. I couldn't concentrate on the rest of that episode once they did that.
When she was like, I'm going to go. Don't chase me. And then she spends the rest of 5 minutes turning around, hoping he's chasing her, only to then go, you chased me.
Yeah, that was... I wanted to like that show more than I did.
Listen, will I be watching next season?
Oh,
angrily?
Yeah!
Yes. It'd be one thing if, like, you know how you're the worst? They're all supposed to be literally fucking terrible. So, like...
It reminded me of a version of you're the worst, but no one is admitting that they're the worst.
Yes. Okay. This is why we're so close. That is exactly how I felt.
Which Gretchen was so much more likable because she was just like, I'm a piece of shit, but I know I'm a piece of shit.
Yeah. And she would do really
stupid ass Joanne was like,
I don't know. Let's go talk about dildos on my podcast. It was almost kind of like the pick-me, and they do call her out for being a pick-me a lot, but like it was like the pick-me version of being self-destructive. Like she'd be like, I'm so self-destructive, but it was just like walking away. You don't understand. My dad didn't hug us. Which I'm not taking away. Yes, that is real trauma. Your dad not hugging you is real trauma or saying I love you, but it's just like... This is not the theatrics we need to be inspiring from it, you know?
No, it was just...
Joanne, whose name, by the way, every single episode I forgot her name was Joanne. I don't know what I thought it was, but every episode I was like, right, her name is Joanne.
Yeah, it was... And then I was like, oh, well, maybe her parents just like to name their daughters old-fashioned things. But then they named the other one Morgan.
Their dynamic, like, Morgan was supposed to be the mess, but, like, so was Joanne. I guess she was supposed to be, like, the functioning mess or whatever. But, like, she was like, I can't let you handle this, like, podcast dinner alone. You'll say the wrong thing. And I'm like, as opposed to you who say the wrong thing whenever you're on screen.
As opposed to you who shows up but then leaves and has a date within sight
right.
of the dinner. And I thought they were going to get in trouble for lighting candles at their table because that seems like a big no-no to do at other people's restaurants.
I'm sorry, especially as podcasters. If I was dating a new guy and he was like, oh, we have like a romantic weekend planned and I got an opportunity like for our business, I'd be like, I'm really sorry. I hope that you can understand why it would be wrong of you to ask me to miss this. We will reschedule.
And he already had a work thing. So why didn't she just go, oh, hey, we both have work things. Like, cool. Like,
let's just
reschedule.
They made this such a problem that didn't need to exist. And that was like the whole show. They were like, oh my, like the sex with the dildo thing. She was like, this is so weird. I'm like, well, yeah, like you knew it was going to be weird. You brought him.
He could have like stayed in the car. And then they like spent an hour wandering around. Then she's like, I guess I'll just ask where it is. I was like, so why didn't he stay in the car? You go in, be like, hey, can you give me the pussy puncher 10,000 and then they give it to her, she buys it and goes back out,
right?
Which is what I would have done.
That's what I would, I think everybody would have, I think I would have said to him, hey, cool, thanks for coming, please stay here, I'm asking this as a boundary thing. I like how we're looking at it from like real 30 something year olds, and this Joanne's like, I'm a mess, come get my dildo in there.
That's like the kind of shit I would have done at 25, I guess. Been like, oh no, you have to come in with me, this is so embarrassing. If I were Justine Lupe, who plays Morgan, the older sister, I would sue because she's 35.
Wait, Morgan's? No, Joanne's supposed to be the older one.
Oh, I thought Joanne was the younger sister and Morgan was the older
sister. Sorry, I didn't mean to yell that at you. I was like, oh.
Well, now, okay. Now I have to figure this out.
That would be so wrong. That would be like in White Christmas.
I think Joanne is the baby sister.
That is so fucked up.
I know. I'd be so pissed if I was cast in a show and they're like, you're going to play the older sister and then like out trots the actress playing my sister and she's 40. I'd be like, no, I'm going to leave. It's our 40th episode.
Oh, yeah, it's our 40th episode. Guys, it's our 40th episode.
Thank you for listening to 40 of these.
Yeah, it's 10 away from 50. Oh, my God. Yay. And it's the 1st of November, as we said earlier. Oh, a lot of alignment here today.
Oh, so exciting.
Yay.
All right, squad. Well, today we are recapping Law & Order SVU Season 2, Episode 14, Paranoia. Original air date, February 16th, 2001. And directed by Richard Dobbs. He directed Hysteria, Misleader, Chatroom. Aw, loved Chatroom. And Abuse, which I think is that the Ashley Austin Black episode?
Yeah, it is. And she makes a, you know how angry I was that Ashley Austin Black reared her ugly curly brow. No, I'm sorry. Hayden Panettiere is not ugly. Reared her little head to cause Olivia more problems today.
Her curly-headed fuck head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, exactly. Curly-headed fuck.
You're a big, fat, curly-headed fuck. I'm a curly-headed fuck. Yeah.
Also, this episode is happening because I wrote down later that Valentine's Day is happening. It is once again a week after they had to deal with last week's episode.
Jesus. It feels like it has been winter for a year.
And now this.
And what is this? Well, we'll tell you.
Here we go.
So there are two cops in a patrol car. They appear to like be on the beat. It's like one of those, almost like a cold open where they're just like shooting the shit about printers or technology or whatever. It's a man and a woman, and they get a call over the radio about a silent alarm at a place called Lorenzo's Storage, and they decide to take it. So they like radio in. They're on their way. We go to Lorenzo's Storage, and my brain goes, oh, it's a Halloween episode because it's Halloween time. Even though this came out in February. But this like was straight up like fucking found footage. Like we're in this warehouse, but there's like chain link fences everywhere and graffiti. Who's keeping their shit here?
Yeah, like what type of warehouse is this?
There's like bees graffitied everywhere, which I appreciated.
The bees were so strange.
So the male cop is like, maybe, do you want to check over there? And they're rummaging around, flashing their flashlights. And he basically seems to turn away from her and then go, huh, there's nothing over here. And then he turns around. And he's like, Karen? Which I was like, why were you speaking out loud? And then all of a sudden you're like, Karen? So he looks for her and there's no sign of her. But all of a sudden he like sees her flashlight on the floor. We hear over the radio that there are other officers in the vicinity and they're on their way as he hears Karen in distress. There's this closed door. He can hear Karen like kind of like muffled screaming and he starts banging on the door, telling her he's going to get to her, and he radios for backup. How the fuck did she get pulled away from him without him hearing anything?
Yeah, no, she disappeared a little too quickly. It made no sense. Yeah, we hear her crying from the other side of the door, which I guess was conveniently locked.
Yeah, he's like banging on it and shaking it. Nothing happens.
Yeah, so yeah. I wondered why. So in the beginning, this has nothing to do with anything. I just wondered why'd she dump her coffee out before doing this? Oh, and why did they show us?
I was thinking that was because they're trying to demonstrate like how they were like full steam ahead, dumping my coffee. And I'm like,
right?
He's such a bad driver. You're going to slop your hot coffee all over yourself?
That's what I was wondering. I'm like, was she afraid that like the top would come off? There's a deeper question here.
So we cut to Stabler, who appears to be in like some alleyway next to like an oil drum or something. And he is puking his little baby guts out. In case we've forgotten, Stabler might have HIV.
Yes. He was exposed to HIV because a woman with HIV killed herself by sledding, tried to kill herself. Sorry, she survived. I'm laughing because she was like, you shouldn't let me die. But she slit her wrists and Sailor had a cut on his hand. And so it might have gotten contaminated. And now the treatment is he has to take anti-HIV medication. Yeah,
so he's on, I guess, anti-HIV medication until his time is up and they can retest to make sure he didn't get it. So he and Benson were clearly out and about, and they had to pull over for him to vom because, like, Liv pops out of the car to tell him that they have a 1013 about 8 blocks away. She's like, do you want me to drive? Because he's clearly
indisposed.
And she's like, it's those pills, isn't it? And he's like practically slurring. He's like, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can drive.
So B&S arrive at the crime scene. They look cute AF tonight. Like, they're wearing like little leather coats. They have like little knit hats on. They both look like totally adorbs. Loving them. The cop greets them at the scene and he tells them that a sergeant and her driver took a call for a silent alarm break-in. They got separated and the sergeant was found in a stairwell with her pants down. It appears she has been raped. They think this assailant like snuck up behind her, put a garbage bag over her head, and then he escaped through an emergency exit with her gun and wallet. So BNS find the victim unconscious in the corner of the stairwell being attended to by two officers. One is her partner, who is Mitch Murray, and the other is the partner of the first cop. Wow, that was a really bad way to explain it. So they say that they were afraid to move her in case her neck was hurt, and they think she was choked with a blunt object like a pipe. So Olivia moves in closer and realizes she knows the victim. So we know this is going to be like a case Liv takes personally. She's like, that's Karen Smythe. She trained me. And then we get like a dramatic pan over to her prone form in the corner. Dun, dun. So now we're at the hospital and Stabler and the two detectives who met them at the scene, who are named Bates and Town, are talking to Mitch Murray, the partner. And Murray is expressing how guilty he feels that he couldn't get to Karen. Stabler hugs him. They're kind of like having like lots of like cop camaraderie. They're like,
yeah, we're going to get this guy.
We both have female partners.
Ugh.
There's too much bro. I wrote one of my notes for this scene just in general about everybody. It's too much bro energy. It's much a boys. Boys.
Stabler's like, oh, you can't blame yourself, man. They're all like, oh, we're going to do whatever we need to do to solve this.
You scared the perp away. You did everything you could. Sorry if my mic was moving around because I was doing like a bro jiggle.
You know, as the boys do.
Yeah, it was very annoying.
So Stabler gently tells them he's got to go talk to Cragen. He expects to see them all down at the station in an hour. And he meets Cragen down the hall to give him an update on Smythe's condition, which is that she's semi-conscious. And it seems that her airways were not cut off long enough for her to have brain damage. So Olivia pops out of Smythe's room to say that she's not awake to like tell her anything yet. And Cragen asks if she has any family. And Olivia says just an ex-husband. Stabler offers to do the notification and Benson says she'll stay with Smythe for when she wakes up. And Cragen again is like, we're going to get this guy.
Yeah.
No one's going home until we solve this case.
I know. Again, just broing everywhere. It's giving Brandy.
Karen.
I can't believe I missed a fundamental opportunity to take every Brandy from the movie and compile it. I'm so mad I didn't do that. I don't know why I didn't do that. I love doing that. I did it for Ashley Austin Black.
So we're in the bathroom at SVU headquarters, which is what I want to call it. And Stabler is splashing water on his face. And for one millisecond, I'm like, oh, he's kind of like sexy. And then he goes into the sink. I was like,
the antivirals or whatever.
So he heads into the bullpen and the camera following him starts to tilt like, whoa, whoa.
It was a little much. I mean, it kind of worked, but then they just don't ever do it again. So it's kind of like, what's the point of that?
Seriously. Cragen is standing by a whiteboard and basically telling everyone that they're going to bring this perp in fast. He's got a cop's gun as a trophy. Everyone's very upset about this.
I know. That kind of, I mean, I'm going to take this as a trophy.
I'm going to take this cop's gun and do lots of bad stuff with it.
See this? This is a cop's gun. I took it as a trophy. I just feel like in general, yeah, like I feel like a robber, crackhead, warehouse dwelling person would just take a gun if they saw one.
Yeah.
They'd probably take an iron. They'd be like, oh, look, an iron. Oh, I can use this as a weapon.
Sell that. So Munch pipes up to say CSU found a crowbar out back and they're going to test the rust on it against the rust on Smythe's neck. Yuck.
Ew.
Cragen asks Finn if there are similar burglaries to this crime. And Finn's like, a burglary using a crowbar? Probably. I don't know why.
Why he never gets yelled at, I'll never know. I feel like he said that a couple of times. Yeah, he's like, Finn, you're so sassy. And he's like, meanwhile, Stabler, albeit yelling, is like, I don't want to investigate the murder of a man who raped a 7-year-old girl.
And they're like, shut up, Elliot.
Craig is like, you are dangerously close to being fired and put in the ground.
So Cragen turns to Stabler, who is just staring into the void, and asks if there are any rape cases where the perp used a garbage bag over the victim's head. Stabler stares at him for like 15 minutes. I'll call in on that. Cragen remembers it's his fault Stabler might have HIV and turns back to the group and tells them to hit the street to look for clues. He walks away and Munch tells Stabler helpfully that he looks like he's the one that got strangled. Thanks, Munch. And Cragen calls Stabler into his office. So inside his office, Cragen's like, you forgot to call in the pattern rapes. And Stabler's like, yeah, I was just getting to it. And Cragen's like, could you go home?
He's like, is that an order?
And I'm just like hearkening back to earlier this season when Olivia's mother died and she was like, no, I want to work. He's like, Stabler, you might have HIV. Can you go home? And Stabler's like, no, no. Is that an order? I want to work. So they have a back and forth and Stabler's like, I'm going to work this case. And Cragen's like, okay. Probably still feeling bad about last episode.
I mean, it's truly his fault. He literally forced this man to do this. And then the guy got exposed to HIV. I keep almost saying AIDS.
So Funch are now talking to Bates and Towns, the cops who showed up to the scene and like introduced Benson and Stabler to everything. And Bates is telling Funch that they came up the back stairs and heard pounding on the door. They followed the noise to find Sergeant Smythe laying there, no sign of the perp. They say they were 10 blocks away on a meal break when they got the call. Munch is like, oh, well, since you know the area, is there anyone who comes to mind who could have done this? And Towns is like, well, the precinct is in Skell Heaven. So Bates asks if they've heard anything from the hospital, and we learn that Karen still isn't conscious. Stabler, meanwhile, is talking to Mitch Murray, the partner, like the guy who was in the car with her earlier, and he explains Karen was behind him, and then all of a sudden she was gone, and he doesn't know how he lost her. He describes hearing noises behind the door, and he's like starting to like get upset and hyperventilate a little. And again, Stabler comforts him, has him sit down. He asks if this is when he called for backup, and Murray says yes. It all happened so fast. He called the 13, and they arrived within a couple of minutes. And then Bates and Town opened the door from the inside. Dun dun. Now we're at the hospital, and Benson is asleep by Smythe's side. She wakes up to find Smythe kind of watching her somberly. So Karen Smythe is played by Candy Alexander, who is an actress and a dancer. She actually started her career as a dancer and was a choreographer for Whitney Houston, which is super cool.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
Yeah. She's probably most famous for her role as the Emmy on CSI Miami and as Olivia Pope's mother, Maya Lewis, on Scandal. So Benson asks her how long she's been awake, and she's like, oh, it's been a couple of hours, but I didn't want to wake you up. Olivia's like, oh, still taking care of the rookie. And Smythe is like, looks like it's the other way around now.
Oh, I hate this type of dialogue.
I was like, cool. So Olivia promises that they're going to catch the guy, and Karen like makes a joke. She was like, I'd be worried if you were still as green as when I first met you. And then tells some like dumbass story about how like some dude pranked Olivia and told her they were going to like land a helicopter on the building. And she was like running around looking for paddles so she could like direct the helicopter. And I was like, Olivia.
From that story, all they did was ask her to go to the roof and turn the light on. And she was like, where are the paddles? You did that to yourself.
Didn't even fucking ask you.
Yeah, the joke was that you were going to get to the roof and realize there probably were no lights. And you were like, should I get the paddles?
So they like pal around and like giggle about that. But then they get more serious. And Karen tells her that last night she just froze. And Olivia's like, of course, you dissociated. That's totally normal. And Olivia asks her what she remembers. And Smythe recounts that they were in the warehouse. Mitch tripped over something because it was so dark. And then someone grabbed her by the throat, put something over her head, dragged her, threw her down, and assaulted her. This person never said a word. He then put something hard, and as we know, it's the crowbar, against her throat, and she couldn't breathe. And the next thing she knows, she woke up to Olivia sleeping next to her at the hospital. Smythe asks Benson if the rape kit was positive, but it's not back yet, and she asks if there are any suspects. And then when Benson replies, not yet, she's like, well, stop babysitting me and go find some. Dun-dun.
Dun dun.
Dun dun.
Sorry.
So back at the station, Olivia's checking on Elliot, who says he got a little bit of sleep. So she catches him up on Smythe. She's going to be okay, but she didn't see anything. He's like, did you tell Cragen about my little barfing spell? And she's like, no.
And there's like, what happened last night? And I was like, what happened? And I'm like, oh, you mean you puked you all over the place?
Everywhere.
Like a woman was being attacked and you were taking your sweet ass time huddled over a trash can puking. You mean that incident?
That incident. She's like, no, I didn't tell anyone. And he's like, well, Cragen tried to send me home, but I told him no. And Olivia's like, well, that was a good decision. And then he's like trying to have like a little sneaky Diet Coke. And she's like, you know, that's going to kill you. And I was like, you sound like my husband. Ugh.
I hate when people pick on Diet Coke and then they do like other things like live.
Or like smoke cigarettes. I'm like, I can drink a little fat DC when I want to. And I would go get the one in my apartment right now if I wasn't afraid of burping into this microphone. Fuck, Aaron.
Fuck, Aaron.
Fuck, Aaron.
So Stadler tells Olivia to hold her nose as they enter the squad room because these assholes have rounded up all the unhoused people in the area and then are bitching that they smell.
It took me a minute to get that.
You brought them in. They didn't like show up and be like, hi, you went and got them. And now you're like, oh, they stink.
How did we know the person was unhoused? It's not like she was like, yeah, he reeked of not showering for weeks due to lack of housing.
In fact, if these people are also stinky, wouldn't that be like a good indicator? They could be like, Karen, was your assaulter very smelly? And if she's exactly. like, no, we're better policemen than these four. So Finn goes over and asks one of the guys if he knows where he is. And the guy's like, well, it's not the outhouse. It's not the White House. It must be the station house. And I think he's funny. Munch tells Finn that they'll have a better chance of sweeping all the sand off the beach than getting something from one of these guys. And I'm like, again, you got... They're all acting like these smelly people came in and are like,
Like bothering them. I know. It's like, listen, they had no choice but to come with you.
Jerks. So Ducks. Bates and Towns enter...
So much easier when you're the listener of the week.
I love being the listener. So Bates and Towns enter with a disheveled man handcuffed between them and announce that they've got a live one. They found him sleeping near the warehouse and he has Smythe's ID on him. So it's they
so
leave.
Stupid. Sorry.
I know. This isn't the guy, everyone. Like, don't
it's not,
worry.
And it was such a dumb scene because they're like, and that's it.
This is the guy that must have done it. We've done your job. Bye. We're going to go sleep. And Finn is like, yeah, you're in deep doo-doo.
And okay. the guy's just like, oh, I found it. Sorry, I'll let you.
Well, no, that's
so
exactly.
Stupid, yeah.
The guy's like, hey, yeah, I found this ID in a dumpster a few blocks away from where they found Karen. He's like, I had no part in this assault. He was sleeping in an alley. They're about to take him to an interrogation room. Stabler hangs up the phone and tells them to like wait up as they're trying to lead this guy away. And I guess he finally did that call he was supposed to do. Last week, a woman in Queens was raped and nearly choked to death in a warehouse. The perp broke in using a crowbar. She woke up 3 days later and told Queens SVU, their best friends, that her assailant put a plastic bag over her head. And it looks like they have a repeat offender carrying a cop's gun.
One, how does that rule out any of the unhoused? People can be nomadic.
My understanding of like police work is you're supposed to follow each lead until it ends.
Right.
So they got a new lead, so they're like, everybody go home.
Yeah, that's why I was saying this is a dumb scene, because they literally, that's it. The guy who's like, I had her ID, but I found it. He really did just find it.
Yes.
What the fuck? All right, well, and then, this was not a question. Stadler looked really cute in his Timberland accent striped shirt.
Oh, he's so fine this episode. He's got that, like a waffle knit white long sleeve that he's wearing.
Under a flannel.
And just that, he's fine.
Moving on.
Moving on. Well, no, seriously, in that scene, I'm like, oh, he's so cute. And then he starts hacking into the sink. And I was like, oh.
You need to lower your standards. Join us down here.
Oh, no, I still think he's hot. But it was funny because I was like thinking like the millisecond before he starts like cough barfing, I was like, oh, he's so fine. And then he was like, into the sink. I was like, oh, okay. Well, dun dun, we're in the apartment of Marina Garza. She is the victim from Queens. Marina tells Finn and Munch that she was in the back of the warehouse doing inventory around 10:30. She heard footsteps and thought it was one of her coworkers, so she got down off the ladder, but all of a sudden was like grabbed from behind. So he put a bag over her head and started punching her. He then threw her down on a pile of boxes and raped her. And then the next thing she knew, she woke up at the hospital. So Finn asks if he took anything, and she says yes, her gold-crossed necklace, and he ripped it right off her neck. And through the entire assault, he never said a word, just like what Karen Smythe reported. Dun dun. Back at the station, Cragen asks about the unhoused gentleman from earlier. He's like, oh, he already let all those people go. So Cragen decides this is good enough to rule him out and asks about the lab results. And Stabler's like, oh, we still haven't gotten a call. And Cragen's like, well, why don't you go light a Bunsen burner under them?
He is so able to make a pun, like, when the world is just collapsing around him. I don't think my brain could work fast enough when we're under duress. Like, I wouldn't be able to, like, make any jokes. No. I'd be like, I'm going to need you to really hurry that up, okay, guys?
Can you go deal with that? Funcher asked to look into Smythe's past cases.
Not the cases.
The Smythes and the cases. Look into her past cases for anyone with a grudge. Now we go over to the lab tech, and we have complained about these rude assholes in the lab before. This chick is the biggest bitch of them all. So she's like whining that she has five homicides. She's like, I have five homicides from last week. Your victim isn't even dead. I'm like, yeah, it's a fucking potential serial rapist. It's actually more important than the dead people.
Yeah, and I remember that two of the homicides from last week were serial rapists. So what do we care?
So Bunsen and Stabler are like, we've got a serial rapist running around with a cop's gun, so this should probably be your top priority. And she's like, well, what do you even want me to say? And Alicia's like, sorry. And Olivia's like, Felicia, you know us. And finally, she's like, positive for spermicide, negative for semen. So it's like, that's what they wanted you to say. Stabler's like, anything else? You crazy bitch. And she's like, well, if they find out I tell you about the rape kit, I'm in big trouble. So outside the lab, BNS are like, that was really fucking weird.
Doesn't that just sort of imply that everyone's involved? I don't know. Like,
it does.
Yeah, sorry, but I'm like, well, yeah, Paige, but so why did I write that?
They're getting the first whiff that someone may be trying to cover up something. So they're like, all right, let's go back to the crime scene and like see what there is to see. So we're back at stupid Lorenzo's storage, the creepiest storage page. Don't store any shit there in New York because you're going to get fucking murdered if you go there. BNS see that the seal on the door to the crime scene is broken. And then when they enter, they see like the scene's been completely cleaned up. What the fuck? So they go to find out what the hell is going on and just speak to this large gentleman who is just sitting in like a plastic chair with the bottom of his gut hanging out. And he's got a payphone next to him, and he just has, like, the receiver in his hand as he, like, angrily answers their questions.
I was so confused by how hard they went with this character. They went really hard with him.
And he's nobody.
That's what I mean. Like, yeah. There was a lot of imagery in his character, and I'm not sure why. You know what I mean? Like, why did we need his stomach to be sticking out like that? It was like a cartoon nightmare.
It was aggressive.
It was aggressive. It was almost like a joke. I was like, are we? No, it was on purpose. Like, it was a style choice, but it was so aggressive. And it was a real person.
Yeah. Like, they, like, did that. They were like, all right, hitch up your shirt a little bit so your belly sticks out. He was like, a little more. Okay.
Upsetting.
So he's in the middle of just being like, yeah, they were here this morning. And BNS are like, who is they?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, two cops and windbreakers. He said, I guess they told him that they had to finish collecting evidence. And he's like, don't you guys talk to each other? So they ask what unit this guy was from. And he's like, well, fuck, why would I know that? And then he breaks it to them that he washed the scene with a hose. And BNS are aghast. They're like, oh, you did what now? Like, what did they say about that? And he was like, it was their idea. And they're just like, what the fuck?
What in the Sam Hill is going on?
So back at the station, BNS return to find two guys rifling through their desks as Cragen watches on. Stabler is like, get away from my desk. And Cragen introduces them to Lieutenants Coates and Waltman from Internal Affairs. I refuse to remember their names and call them Thing 1 and Thing 2 in half my notes.
Yeah, they don't show up too much.
Coates is played by Dominic Fumusa? Fumusa? We last saw him in season 1 as the detective. So he's in the episode Stalked, the episode we didn't really like. And you know towards the end when the stalker kills one of his victims and there's a cop at that scene talking to Benson and Stabler, and I think I mentioned he was from Sex and the City.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's that guy. He's also, again, in that episode of Sex and the City where Miranda dates one of Carrie's exes. He's Asshole Jim. So Benson and Stabler are just like, see these two guys going through their desks, and they're like ready to rumble. They're like,
Olivia really stumbles through a cheese joke. It took a while. I was like, how did this happen? It's a scripted show.
Stabler's like, find anything incriminating in my wife's photo? And Benson's like, yeah, if you're hungry, I left a candy bar in my desk. Sorry, no cheese.
She goes, I think it's a Hershey bar. Sorry, no cheese. I'm like, oh my God.
Wow.
Cut it off, Olivia. That was a long joke.
One of the guys is like, we've got some questions for you. Can we use your office to like Cragen? And he's like, oh yeah, sure. And my desk is unlocked if you need anything else. And all the cops are like, oh, not really. But they just came in so aggressively. Might as well. Yeah, they're all like
Rat Squad. Highly immature.
It's like the nerds came and they're like, ooh, Hall Patrol is here.
It's literally, it's their HR and they're like, losers.
Oh, they're so mad.
It's really a showing.
Because like they're inside Cragen's office and everyone's like squaring up, like posturing. Internal Affairs is like, is all your paperwork from last month up to date? And Olivia's like, well, we wouldn't be doing our job properly if it wasn't. And they're like, is that a yes or a no?
Is that a yes or a no?
They're just like children as soon as these two assholes came in.
Like, we don't even know if they're the ones covering it up yet.
So IA tells Benson and Stabler that they need all their files by like EOD. And BNS is like, oh, what is this about? Is this about the Smythe case? And IA is like, all right, well, we got to go. Bye. Have all those files to us. Pew, pew, pew. Finger guns like out the door and everyone's mad. Dun dun. So Benson and Stabler and Funch are having like a cute little diner date as they kind of gossip about what Internal Affairs could be up to.
It made me want diner food so bad.
There's a lot of dinering in this episode.
There is. There's a lot of dinering.
So Olivia, our like little sweet summer child, is like, IA investigates crooked cops and we know we're clean. I was like, Stabler is about to have so many run-ins with IA. You don't even know. Of course, all this fucking hullabaloo has our resident conspiracy theorist Munch all like H-O-T-T-O-G-O. He's just like, KGB, McCarthy, Red Squad, ooh, mad. I didn't even write it down.
I tuned out because it's whatever, not even man. Like.
Every time he does one of these, he's like, in 1975, Ronald Reagan wrote, and I'm like, I don't care. Nobody cares, Sean.
From a notes perspective, it's very frustrating when they have him do things like this because I'm like, maybe I should write it down. Maybe he's right about something. Ugh, no.
No. Not this time. At
no.
Least. Never, actually. So Munch asks what they wanted and they tell him that they have to hand over all their case files for the last month. What a load these guys are about to get. So they wonder which of them could be under investigation. And Finn is like, well, maybe Karen Smythe? Olivia's like, she wouldn't even take a cup of coffee. Shut up, Olivia.
Yeah, what you should be worried about, Olivia, is how many of those case files are even still around. Out here throwing them at Nick Gansner and the like.
That's why she was fucking yelling about cheese and stuff. She's like, don't go looking for my files. Dun dun. So outside, Funch discuss IAB some more. And Munch asks Finn what he's found out, and Finn reveals something that he didn't want to say in front of Olivia after she kind of, like, had a little hissy fit when he suggested it could be Karen. So Smythe and her husband got divorced a year ago because of her husband's gambling issues. They had to sell their house to pay off over $70,000 in credit card debt. But as of last month, he is still paying his bills late, so they decide to pay him a little visit. Dun dun. So they head over to the Triborough Bakery where the ex-husband Todd Smythe works. Smythe is played by Isaiah Whitlock Jr., who is a bit of an SVU regular. We last saw him last season as the captain getting yelled at the beginning of the Comstat meeting. At the beginning of the Cragen versus Comstat episode. I forget the real title. So he's telling them that he's relieved she's okay. They don't speak often, but she called and told him about the assault. They ask him about their marriage, and Munch even kind of like tries to get him to talk shit because he's like, oh yeah, like I have a bunch of ex-wives and they all like hate my fucking guts. But this guy takes full responsibility for what happened. He's like, yeah, she worked hard. I went and blew our life savings on gambling. Finn asks if he's still in the wagon, and he tells them that when she left, he went to Gamblers Anonymous and he's clean. So Munch brings up his credit report and they're like, based on what we're seeing, you're still gambling. What's the deal? So he finally admits that he's borrowing money from a friend, $100,000. And Finn and Munch are like, what's the balance on that, you idiot? And he claims it's squared away. And Finn's like, okay, like, how did you pay that off? And he claims he paid 50 grand on his own. And then the other half was paid by some anonymous donor. And Finn and Munch give him a look like, oh, come on, dude. And he's like, no. Like, I thought the same thing. But the other day he went to go see his guy about paying the other half. And the guy was like, nope, it's all taken care of. Funch continued to push because this is just so sus. And the guy's like, listen, all I know is this guy isn't banging down my door anymore. His loan shark is this guy named Uncle Sammy, and he operates out of Chinatown. Dun dun. Wow, this is like an episode we can just fly through. I'm like, there's really not a lot to like laugh about.
I have questions, but I'm like, I guess they should just wait till the end. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Now I'm like, I have the urge to ask it. Okay, I'll wait.
So Funch tracked down Uncle Sammy on the streets of Chinatown, and he's like, can I help you guys? Finn flashes his badge and is like, yeah, I want to borrow some money. Uncle Sammy puts on this jovial attitude like, oh, you must mistake me for a bank. And Funch decides it's time for a little casual stop and frisk and find betting slips and a fat stack of cash in Uncle Sammy's coat. So Uncle Sammy's like, all right, what do you want? And they ask who paid off Todd's loan. Uncle Sammy tries to play dumb. He's like, who, what, when, where, why? And he finally coughs it up. The person who paid off Todd's loans was Karen. Shocking.
Again, oh, I have questions. All right, I'll wait.
So, dun dun, back at the station, Cragen asks Funch if Uncle Sammy told them how Karen came up with this money. And I was like, I don't think loan sharks care.
I mean, I think they do have a method of like transfer where it has to be unmarked or whatever, but like they don't care.
I feel like Munch was annoyed that Todd Smythe didn't engage with him on like his ex-wife shit talk because he brings up his ex-wives again. He's like, they wouldn't throw water on me if I was on fire. So BNS roll in. They're finally done organizing all their... Liv is finally done running through Manhattan trying to recover all her files.
All the files she fucking threw at all these men.
She probably had to take one back from Cassidy and he was probably like, Olivia, I still love you. And she was like, can I just get this file back?
He has a bunch of pictures from his solo trip to Mexico that he took of himself, like, on a tripod.
He's like, here I am having Caesar salad at that place that invented Caesar salads in Tijuana, Mexico. And she's just, like, head in her hands, like, great, Brian.
My God, is that real? That's real? Caesar salads were invented in Tijuana?
Yes. Fun fact. And you can go, I think, to the restaurant where it was invented and they'll, like, make it beside your table.
Oh my God.
Doesn't that sound amazing?
That is a today years old thing. Honestly, just assumed it was invented in Italy, being that it was called a Caesar salad.
It sounds Italian. It like looks Italian. It's served at Italian fucking restaurants. I don't go to Margaritas to get a Caesar salad.
I don't think I've ever seen a Caesar salad on a Mexican meal menu.
No.
I'm going to have to Google this. Wow, amazing. Moving on.
I'm so happy I could bestow this knowledge on you.
Beautiful information.
So Benson and Stabler roll in and ask if they have any idea who IAB has set their sights on. And Cragen is like, yeah, it's Karen Smythe. Dun dun. So Liv pays Karen a visit at her apartment and asks her why Todd is saying she paid off his debt. And Karen is being super evasive and telling Olivia this doesn't concern her. Olivia's like, listen, I am running out of reasons to defend you. And Karen's like, yeah, well, back off. Has she met Olivia Benson before? I'm like, you trained her. And she's like, back off, Olivia. I'm like, this woman? And she knows you. You're her friend.
Yeah, no, she tends to double down. So telling her to back off, it's more like a waste of your own time.
Well, Liv gets bratty. She's like, I'm doing what you taught me, investigating a rape. Karen goes, I wasn't raped. I remember what happened now. I wasn't raped. So she sips her tea and Olivia's like, what the fuck are you talking about? You were found with your pants down, almost choked to death, and there was spermicide in your rape kit. And Karen won't look at her. She's like, yeah, I had sex before I was on duty. Just like so up. I love SVU showing lying because people are always like, yeah, no, that didn't happen to me.
Yeah, they're always like, I'm just sipping my tea and walking around my living room. And you realize they're not really walking anywhere. They're just walking around the living room. Clear indication that they're lying.
Olivia's like, yahoo. And Karen's like, you wouldn't know him. He goes to another school.
Yeah, it's an old boyfriend.
An old boyfriend.
To school in Canada. And she actually, I was about to say he's married, but she is.
She, yeah, she does say to her. Yeah, he's married, so she can't say his name. So Liv is very confused and asks who got to her and what kind of trouble she's in. And Karen, who has like been staring straight ahead this whole time, finally looks at her and she's like, you're the one causing the trouble. And Liv is like fucking done with this. And she's like, well, let's ask Eternal Affairs that will go on forever.
My God,
ever.
Can you imagine? We should open that business together, Brittany.
Eternal Affairs.
We just lock them in rooms. Here we go. Here you go. Got what you wanted.
Here's your eternal affair.
Your eternal affair. Now you can leave everyone alone.
So Liv is like, well, let's ask Internal Affairs and see what they have to say. And Karen's like, get the fuck out. Everyone's pissed.
Just a note. Both of these ladies need a lipstick touch-up during this scene. It was killing me.
Yeah, no.
They both were wearing, like, bold, you know, 90s. Yeah, like 90s red lips. And I was like, there's a whole lot of liner on both of you and not a lot of lipstick.
Dun dun. So Liv's with Cragen outside the precinct and gives him basically the 411 on that little scene with Karen. And Cragen's like, okay, well, without her, there is no rape case. And Liv's like, listen, someone scared her. We've gone through her financials. There's no sign that she's a dirty cop. So Liv asks Cragen to do something about this situation. And he's like, I'm going to go see the chief of like some high up muckety muck shit to find out who's trying to shut down the investigation. And Liv's like, well, we can't let this go. And Cragen's like, oh, we're not. This is on our turf.
This is a rape and we will not let it go.
I love that in some episodes, they're told to drop it. And Cragen's like, Olivia, we were told to drop it. And then some episodes, they are told to drop it. And Cragen's like, I will not drop it. This is our turf.
No, it's true. Like, sometimes they'll be like, you have to drop it because this is a rich person. And then other times they're like, IAB is telling us specifically to drop it. And they're like, we're not going to drop it. And I'm so confused what the rules are. When do we have to care about IAB?
So, Dun Dun, in the bullpen, poor Stabler is trying to get his test results on the phone, and the person on the phone is, like, literally looking at his results, but isn't a doctor, so can't tell Stabler, like, what they say. And Stabler, who should be screaming, for once, this is a time when it's okay to scream at somebody on the phone, and Stabler, for, like, once is acting whipped, and he's like, well, okay, I just think you need a new policy. Goodbye.
That happened to me. I called and I was like, can you just like tell me what it says on my x-rays? They're like, well, I can't because I'm not a doctor. You'll have to make an appointment. I was like, so you want me to pay money to hear
what a scam.
My results? It is a scam. It's a scam. Do you hear me? It's a fucking scam. Look me in the face and argue with me, but you won't. Anyway.
So Munch wanders over and is kind of like, oh, what's going on? And I thought they were going to have like a nice scene of him being like, you know, Stabler, because he always has like a story about like the time he was photographed nude or the time his like ex-wife chased him with an axe or some shit. But Stabler literally is like, they have my results, but can't tell me. And dun dun, it's the next scene. Like literally, that's it. Dun dun. So we cut to 1PP and we're outside and it's like Cragen and Chief Muckety Muck of
Muck City.
Of the police. I don't know. And it sounds like it's like they're doing a scene from The Godfather because I call him the king of 1PP, which I don't think is that funny of a joke. And I'm sorry I ever wrote it down. He's like, you need my help, Donnie? Yeah, IAB's putting the squeeze on some of my detectives.
It must be exhausting to come up with this type
just
of shit.
Just being that cheesy. I was like, ew.
It's insane the way people talked back then.
But, like, basically, Cragen explains that they're being scrutinized because of this whole Karen Smythe thing. And this guy already knows about that. And he's like, yeah, but it sounds like she's dirty because she's, like, been with her ex-husband who has all this, like, issues with gambling. And Cragen's like, oh, so you, like, already know about that. And the guy's like, yeah. And Cragen's like, all right, well, why wasn't she fired? And the guy just kind of, like, looks at him like, So I don't even know what the fuck was achieved at this meeting.
I don't either. It just sounds like maybe it was like to add a layer of, oh, it's deeper than you think. Like, but then I have so many questions about that. Also, he was eating a pretzel during this interaction, King Muckety Muck. And first of all, it was incredibly disrespectful.
It was huge.
It was huge. It looked delicious. It did. And because it was Valentine's Day, it said it on the title card. I wanted him to eat it into a heart and then kind of like give it to Cragen after like, no.
So because Dad said no, Cragen goes to Mom, and Cabot is looking fierce in an all-black pantsuit today. And Cragen's like basically like, I just know in my gut something is going on. And they have like the rape kit. He believes IAB is forcing Smythe to recant. Cabot asks why they're trying to cover up the rape of one of their own. And Cragen's like, listen, I want to know that too. But he needs help because basically one PP said no and he's running out of options. So Cabot's like, all right, well, let me go talk to Karen first. Dun dun. We're in Karen's laundry room in her apartment building. And she's kind of pissed off Cabot is there. Cabot's trying to urge her to reconsider recanting her testimony, and Karen's like, oh, so you're here to threaten me? And Cabot's like, I mean, I don't really want to, but you're like obstructing justice, so yeah. And Karen's like, well, recanting was my choice and don't make it my last, which I feel like is a pretty blatant like,
I was gonna say, it's basically, hey. I wrote that down too, and like that's kind of like being like, yeah, no, you could kill me with this because someone's, it's like being like, someone's starting to kill me.
Yeah.
Leave it alone. No, we can't now.
Also, like this whole conversation, she's trying like pretending to fold towels, but the actress is doing a terrible job. She's like bunching them together, miming folding them, but you can see she's not.
She's doing that thing where it's like, I'm too busy for this conversation about my own rape.
That is exactly what she's doing. I was like, okay. Well, that's it. That's dun-dun. She kind of like leaves Cabot with that cryptic remark. And now we're back in Chinatown and Funch drop in on Uncle Sammy again. And they're like, yeah, you're under arrest for loan sharking and shit and lying. And he's like, well, what did I lie about? They start leading him away in cuffs. And he's like, listen, if I tell you, you have to protect me. And he spits it out. The people that actually, quote unquote, paid off Todd Smythe's debt were two cops. And he spills the tea that he was approached by two cops who told him to forgive Smythe's loan or they'd throw him in jail. I'm saying forever. They actually were like, you're not going to see sunlight for a quarter century. I don't know. Like
25 years.
Well, Uncle Sammy's old. So I guess he's like, no, yeah, don't do that.
That wouldn't be the best thing.
So Munch asks what these cops look like, because, I mean, if you remember, we do have like kind of two sets of two in this episode.
We do. And they all have, like, similar names, kind of. Coats, Towns, Barnes.
Uncle Sammy describes the IAB guys. Suits, trench coats, misplaced attitudes. And Munch is like, that sounds like two cheese-eating lieutenants we know. So they uncuff him and let him go.
So he makes a mention. He said, yeah, they said that I could take the loss as a tax deduction. Because he's like, you know, he's not getting his $50,000 back. They're just being like, you're not going to collect it, period.
I said paid off. It's... He just doesn't get $50,000.
Yeah, they're like, you're just not gonna. But so, again, and this is semi-rhetorical in nature because we don't really get an answer, but, like, doesn't that just imply that it's a huge cover-up? Because, I mean, it's
like,
possible.
That's a pretty fucking big deal.
Right. I mean, it's possible the two IAB guys who said it were just saying it, but, like, you can't guarantee. That's basically saying, feel free not to file your taxes this year, and we'll make it go away. So I'm like... And for what it ends up being, what I think it is, I'm like, this seems like a big hullabaloo, you know, for like all of this. Anyway, so dun dun.
Dun dun. So we're now in Cabot's office, and Cragen almost gets smacked by the door as Thing One and Thing Two, the IAB guys, come a bitching into the room. The one from Sex and the City is like, you're going to have us arrested. Cabot tells them to watch their tone, and Thing One tells her to adjust her attitude. They reveal she's charging them with obstruction of justice.
Sorry. Such a dumb... Fix your tone. Adjust your attitude.
I know. Everyone's just like a bitching at each other.
Girls.
Ladies. So Cabot shuts the door and is like, all right, cool. We have your attention. Here's how this is going to go. You're going to tell us why Karen recanted and give us all your case files and notes, and then we won't go through with these charges. So they accuse her of bluffing. I wrote bluffins, which is delightful. They accuse her of bluffins, and she's like, yeah, we'll see about that. So Cragen kind of tries to appeal to their sense of honor as cops, and he's like, listen, you're covering up the rape of a fellow cop. And Thing One, who I'm not on his side, but he's like, don't you guys fucking get it? Because even I kind of fucking get it at this point. No, they don't fucking get it, because Cabot tells Cragen to read them their rights, and Thing Two tells her that if he does, a year's worth of undercover work is going to go down the toilet. Aha. So Cragen's like, okay, well, who is the target of this investigation? They have a back and forth. IAB doesn't want to give up this info. They threaten to ruin Cragen and Cabot's careers. And they're like, we'll do whatever we need to do to get justice, blah, blah, blah. Cabot basically gives them one last chance to spill. And they're like, nope, not without our lawyers. So they're like, fine, bring them tomorrow to SVU and you're going to turn yourselves in and be under arrest. Blah, blah, blah.
Blah.
Yeah. Back at the station, Benson is telling Stabler about how Karen is the one who told Olivia that she had a talent for dealing with victims after a particularly hard case in the first few weeks in the job. As she's recounting the story, Munch runs up to them and is like, I hope you've had your coffee. He's always coming with like stupid warnings. Like instead of just running over and being like, hey, Karen's here and she's really fucking pissed, he like has to run over and be like, hope you've like he's like the Riddler.
I know, it's so unhelpful. Like, I know people like this at work where you're just like, can you just give me the news?
Just fucking
like,
tell me.
You're not on a fucking TV show. Well, he is, but.
So Karen's in her uniform and she marches up to ask Olivia if she needs to file a formal complaint to stop her. And Stabler's like, how do you even know we're still investigating you? Did IAB tell you? And she looks at Olivia and kind of sneers. She's like, you never could let things go. Olivia is her feathers are fucking ruffled. She's like, excuse me. So Karen throws the Ashley Austin Black case in her fucking face like that singer whose daughter you wouldn't leave alone. She had to file a restraining order. I was like, oh my God, the ghosts of episodes past.
So annoying because real ones know that Ashley Austin Black was stalking Olivia Jade Benson.
Olivia! Olivia!
Oh, I love that. I wish that was her middle name. That's beautiful.
I think I might have actually, we might need to recant that because I believe Olivia Jade might be Lori McLaughlin's bitch daughter.
She is. But Olivia Jade Benson sounds so beautiful. Damn it, Olivia Jade.
We're reclaiming it. Whatever. Don't care. Taking it back.
So Stabler is like behind Karen and he's like pissed. She's insulting his girlfriend. He's like, you're out of line. So Olivia asks her how she knows this, except I'm like, I thought the fact that Olivia got in trouble was based like practically in the news.
I thought it was in the news.
Like it was a big fucking deal at the time. And as we're learning, this was like but a month ago. So Karen tells Olivia to watch herself and Olivia's eye. You know how we discussed last episode that Stabler gets the nose thing when he's ready to go a sneering and a snooting around town and screaming? For Olivia, and not that she doesn't really yell, but when Olivia's activated, the eyebrows go up. She's like, what's that supposed to mean?
She gets like a concerned look on her face like, oh, yeah?
Oh. Stabler's backing his girlfriend up. He's like, oh, that sounds like a threat to me. So Karen's like, just some advice. Lay off. Cragen strolls up. Everyone is just like in peak form this episode because he's like, the shoulders are working. He's coming up. I know you weren't telling my detectives to ignore a case I assigned them. And Karen's also one of them, too, because she's also like everyone's just it like.
The energy is hot in here.
She's like, no, I'm not mistaken. You can tell them. You have your orders. And then she mean mugs them as she walks away. Like, she, like, her body turns. She's walking away, and she's still like, I wrote, like, I was afraid she was going to run into someone.
I know. She was managed to get out of there unscathed.
So, Steve remarks that she has a pair of onions talking to them that way. He's like, yes. She's got a lot of onions to be speaking to us that way.
She got a pair of onions talking to you like that.
Like, instead of de-escalating as I would have, he decides to go, she's got a pair of onions talking to you like that.
I love when someone does that, when they're like, well, she had a lot of guff to say that to you.
I mean, the visual of a pair of onions, like, onions are huge.
Dangling betwixt a man's legs. My haunting. Goodness.
Haunting. Disgusting. Haunting imagery, Elliot Marie.
So Olivia's like, what orders? And Cragen gives them the news. Brass called and they're off the case, and they're just like, oh, what the hell is going on? Even though it has been fucking spelled out for them. So they move on to Cragen's office to have a full blown brainstorming session because they just cannot. But they do start to wonder if, since IAB is protecting Karen, they must be investigating someone around her. So Cragen's like, all right, let's like roll this all the way back to the night of the rape and look like right down to the smallest detail. Dun dun. So dramatic music, like boom, is playing as Stabler kind of like, what's the word? Mission Impossible's his way up to like a police cruiser. Like he's like almost like dramatically like, this man could not be subtle if he tried. He's like looking around. He like rummages around in the back, doesn't find anything. And then he like goes into the front, is rummaging around. And a cop who is just doing his job like pops up in the window and then is like, oh, what the fuck are you doing? So Stabler flashes his badge and says he's working on the Smythe case. And he's like, listen, Karen said she left her address book in here. I was just trying to get it for her. And the guy's like, all right, well, her squad car's over there. And as the guy's talking, you can see that Stabler's like low key bagging something and like putting it in his pocket. He's like, oh, thanks, man. Cool.
It looked like subtle. A bag of cocaine. I was like, is that cocaine? And then it's not.
It's not. So back at the station, Finn and Munch meet at the hall, and Finn is like holding up a tape and grinning. And he's like, used to date a sergeant who works in communications. And I was like, Paige, we could have worked at a police station.
I didn't know you could become a sergeant with a communications degree.
I know. I want to go communicate police stuff.
Yeah, I would prefer to be doing that.
Meanwhile, Olivia's so embarrassed that Karen knows about the Ashley Austin Black saga because she's like, how does she even know about that? And I'm like, Olivia, everyone heard about it.
It was like in the news. She was supposed to be Madonna.
Bitch. So Finn is listening to the tape and calls over Cragen because he thinks he has something. So he is listening to the radio calls from the night of Karen's rape. So Murray called in the 1013. 2 seconds later, Bates and Town say that they'll respond. And then 24 seconds later, they call in and say they've arrived. And Munch recalls that according to Bates and Towns, they were on a meal break when this whole shit broke out in the sector, and then they were 10 blocks away. But we are learning, based on this like radio situation, they were there the whole time. Stabler chimes in that the cigarette butts recovered from the car match the DNA from the hair collected in the rape kit. So it is, in fact, Bates who raped Karen Smythe. Dun dun.
Dun dun.
So the gang is all here as they pull over Bates and Towns. Bates reaches for his fun. I think you mean gun, Brittany, and says he sees. Why is everyone like this episode? He like starts to reach for his gun and he's like, and they're like, really? You're going to shoot a cop? He's like, I don't see any shields. I just see 4 pieces of crap.
Yeah, I see 4 pieces of crap. No shields. And I'm like, well, isn't that because detectives are allowed to dress cooler than cops are?
I mean, they have their like huge police hats on in all these scenes. They look ridiculous. Finn sticks his gun right in Bates' face and he's like, listen, I have no problem shooting you. And Towns begs Bates to just follow the instructions. And finally, Bates puts his hand up, but he's like smirking and nodding the whole time.
Yeah, like, he's mm-hmm. like, get. He's like, mm-hmm. going like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they cuff him and put him in the back of the police car. So BNS go to arrest Murray, thinking that because this was a setup, he had to have been in on it. But as they get to the doors of Murray's precinct, Thing 1 and Thing 2 come out with Murray in handcuffs, saying he just confessed to the rape of Karen Smythe.
Yeah, this was confusing.
This was confusing.
They did say that. They said he confessed to the rape of Karen Smythe. But then, like, 2 minutes later, they're like, so why are you letting him take the fall for the rape? And they're like, he's not getting arrested for rape. So, but it's like conspiracy, I guess.
Yeah.
To commit rape.
So they get into a bit of a pissing match. And Thing One reveals that the charges that Cabot was trying to bring against them from the DA's office were dropped. And he's like, if your little friend sells her job, she can tell you about it. They're like, oh, so you're covering your ass by arresting Smythe for rape? And they're like, no, we're arresting him for money laundering and drug running. Which I was like, well, then why did you bring up that he confessed to rape? Like, they made it sound like they were arresting him. And then when they were like, well, okay, why? And they're like, but we're not arresting him for rape. We're arresting him for drug running.
No, it was definitely confusing because they said it. And then they even confused the squad because they were like, well, then why are you letting him take the fall for the rape that Bates committed? And they're like, they said that and they were like, no, we're not. And I'm like, oh, this is annoying.
What are you doing? So dun dun, Cabot approaches the lawyer in charge of Thing One and Things Two's case against Bates and Towns, I guess. That's who this person is.
Yeah, I think so.
So like, she approaches this guy and they fight about whose case is more important. And also, at one point, he stands up to confront her, and he is noticeably shorter than she is. And I don't think Stephanie March is that tall. So there is this huge drug lord, Mickey Farnsworth, who I would never take serious. If they were like, Brittany, this is big-time criminal Mickey Farnsworth, I'd be like, what's up, nerd? Just give him a noogie.
It's such a ridiculous name. And I'm like, did we meet him before? Like, the way they're saying it. I know it's like, we don't have to meet everyone. But I was like, have we met him? We haven't.
They couldn't nail Mickey Nicky for some reason. And I think it's because Bates, Towns, and Murray have been guarding his shipments for like a year and a half. So Cabot's like, why the fuck was I not told about this? And he's like, need to know basis. So much shit could have been avoided this episode if, like, at the beginning of the episode, like, some bigwig, like, called Alex into the office and was like, here's the deal. This is what's going down. That squad trusts you, so you just go to them. And she'd be like, all right, guys, we can't investigate this rapes for reasons.
I know. That's why I don't really understand. If they wanted SVU off their tail, why didn't anyone say this sooner? But I guess because it's like, I guess we can out. I'm trying not to, like, interrupt in order to discuss this because I guess it could lead to a bigger conversation. But I'm like, the whole thing seems to just be, like, really poor handling of, like, internal affairs.
Well, everyone just acts sus as fuck and just expects everyone to be like, oh, okay, yeah, got it. Instead, everyone's like, okay, well, I don't know what your wink and nods mean, so I'm just going to keep investigating until I find out what's going on. Cool. So this asshole lawyer tells Cabot that they gave Murray immunity if he testified against Bates, Towns, and Farnsworth. And she's like, you son of a bitch. And she's like, well, guess what? I have Bates and Towns and I'm not going to give them up. Ha ha ha. There's a lot of pissing matches in this episode. Okay, so dun dun, we're at Rikers Island. Earlier today, I was trying to remember the name of our favorite inmate at Rikers. Victor?
Oh my God.
Justice for Victor.
Victor Spicer.
Victor Spicer. He's probably out dancing outside of the interrogation room.
He's like, Beck for more detectives. They're like, Victor, we don't have time.
Shut up.
He's just like blowing kisses to them. He like knits them things and they take them. They're like, fine.
The hats they were wearing at the beginning of the episode were like a Victor Spicer special. Cabot and Cragen are questioning Murray. And the lawyer is like, yeah, well, he's not going to testify about the rape, but I think they just kind of want to get his story, whether or not he's going to testify. So he tells them that Bates and Towns came to him to say that Karen was onto them. I guess a friend of Towns saw her talking to a known member of the Rat Squad, which is IAB's dealio.
And at first I was like, well, what if they were just speaking of the weather? Like, what, you're supposed to, like, can you imagine being on the Rat Squad and you walk over and you're like, oh, I'm sorry, do you know what time it is? This is the time when you might not have had a watch or a phone.
Right.
And they're just like, nice try, Rat Squad.
Bates is basically, if you watch this episode, you can tell that Bates is the ringleader. And yeah. He's like, oh, well, we can't take a chance. And he comes up with this plan. Cragen asks how he, Murray, came to be involved with them, and Bates approached him and told him he could make $1,000 each time he freelanced. He has a kid going to college in a couple years, and the cash would be a big help. So Cabot asks why Bates raped her, and Murray says that he said that, this sucks, he said he had to break her. Blech. So he heard about that garbage bag rape in Queens, the rape of Marina, and he thought it would be great for a copycat. And then I realize at this point, we never find out if they catch that guy, like Marina's rapist.
That's Queens SVU's job.
That's their problem. Bates and Towns planned to break in, trip the alarm, and then Murray just had to make sure they were parked close enough that they would be the ones to respond to the call. And then Alexandra Cabin asks if they plan to kill her. Murray just looks at her, so yeah, they were planning on killing her.
Yeah, I wasn't sure at first. I was like, I don't know if that's shame or like, no.
But also,
they were going to kill her.
How fucking hard is it to kill somebody?
Well, and then not like why the rape, but that's why it's like such a dumb reason. Like, we had to break her. I would understand that from the perspective of like, maybe then she won't do things like this again, you know, but like, you plan to kill her, so you raped her to break, whatever.
It doesn't make sense. Oh, no. So this is stupid.
Okay.
Murray goes, oh no, he said he had to rape her to break her, but he raped her so he would, it would look like it was the Queen's rapist. So I don't know why Murray said that, because I guess that's not true, because they were planning on killing her. So dun dun, Benson and Stabler have Bates in the mean interrogation room, where Bates' lawyer is like, he's not going to talk. He doesn't have to talk to you guys.
He's innocent.
PNS are like, that's fine. We have this Jagov's DNA anyway. The lawyer's like, yeah, he was at the scene. That hair means nothing. So Stabler does like his favorite thing where he's like, when he starts to like poke people, he's like, Bates, what's it like to be an errand boy for some guy who sells dope to school kids? Huh?
It is a little embarrassing. I don't know why, but when he said that, I was like, that tracks. It is a smidge embarrassing.
That is like embarrassing shit.
I don't know why it was so embarrassing. I was like, yeah, it's like, ugh, I'm poor. I need a second job running drug money for Mickey Farnsworth. Mm. It sounds like such a bitch move. I don't know. Totally beta move.
Well, they badger him a little bit. And finally, Bates is like, Smythe's never going to testify. And Stabler points out she's currently talking to the DA, and Bates is like, yeah, if that bitch gets on the stand, the whole world finds out she's a rat.
I have so many questions about this.
So basically he's saying if they go down for rape, her career is going to go down with them. He calls her a rat without a spine, and Stabler's like, look at you, raping a fellow cop. You're a real man, aren't ya? Bates leans in and is like, get out of my face. Which I was like, you got
in his face.
What are you doing? Stabler calls him a little bitch boy, essentially. He's like, you couldn't even face her when you were assaulting her. Make you feel like a real man, errand boy.
That's like what you sent me today on Instagram, where the girl goes, you're a bitch boy with a bitch body.
I loved that so much. He's like, I hate you. I know, get out of here. And she goes, yeah, you're a bitch boy with a bitch body.
He called her deranged, I think.
Yeah. Completely brain dead. You're a bitch face and a bitch body.
Oh, I mean, what so a disrespectful, good. Especially to a man. Like, you got a bitch body. Like, you are frail. Put some bass in your voice with your bitch body.
I love her. Queen.
Queen. She's a Leo. I looked it up.
So Stabler's like, make you feel like a real man, errand boy. Bates has no reply to this. So he literally goes, like, he's just like,
yeah. Yeah. He literally just coughs twice, and then they're like, well.
So Olivia is back at Karen's, and like Karen opens up the door, and they're like a couple after a fight. They're both like, hi.
Sorry, I brought up the fact that you were stalking an 8-year-old.
They're both like so embarrassed because they've both, mostly Karen.
They've both been embarrassing. Yeah. Yes. No, I understand. Listen. We understand what's been going on here, but everyone needs to fucking calm down.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's the long and short of it. The TLDR. Stop.
Relax. Olivia is like, you could have told me. And Karen's like, sorry.
I don't know why.
You could have told. I don't know. You just know like how Olivia talks. And she's just like, You could have told me.
Everyone's being so dramatic.
You could have told me. And Karen's like, I couldn't. So this is sad. She's like, I don't even know which one raped me. And Olivia, I'm really sorry, Karen.
I really was excited for this answer. I couldn't tell.
I'm like, have you met them? It was obviously Bates. So Olivia tells her it was Bates, and she asks Karen how she knew that they were running drugs for Farnsworth. Again, because no one...
Everyone's stupid is the reason.
Basically, Murray was gossiping on the phone, and Karen just, like, walked in, and it happened multiple times.
Yeah, she heard him mention Nikki Farnsworth, like, on the phone.
Everyone is so obvious. She's obviously talking to the rats, like, in broad daylight. They're obviously drug, like, no one is being subtle. So Olivia's like, oh, so you told those dumb nerds because you wanted to do the right thing, right? Like, ew, like, why else would you tell IAB? And Karen's like, oh, I've been working for them all along, actually. Like, I love them. I practically am one. So Karen Smythe is what is called a field associate. IAB approached her in the academy and told her she could make a difference. She just had to keep her eyes and ears open, and she was happy to do it. She says that after 15 years, she loves her job and believes in what she does. And then when three dum-dums like Bates, Towns, and Murray do bad shit, it makes people lose trust in the police. So she takes her role as this, like, field agent, officer, coordinator very seriously.
Everyone just had two side jobs.
Sneaking in a snooping around and... So in what I can only picture as a very uncomfortable scene, IAB visited her in the hospital and told her that BT&M set her up and tried to kill her. I have seen those guys and they have no bedside manner. So I'm sure they just, like, busted in and were like, hey, Karen, sorry about your rape.
Also, we're going to need you to drop it.
We're also going to have to say you lied. So
yeah, sorry, you were mistaken because we need. And I'm like, okay, we're almost done, so I'll just save my fucking questions again.
So Karen realized that if this went to trial, the defense would ask her if she was a field associate and should be exposed. And Olivia tells her that Bates and Towns are getting indicted for the rape, and Karen just leans back and is like, great, then I'm going to be a target. And Olivia's like, they raped you, Karen. And I'm like, she knows, Olivia. And Karen's like, yeah, and I have to live with that. But I was just thinking back to this podcast I listened to. It's the one I talked about when we discussed CompStat. Basically, like, what would happen was, like, cops were seeing, like, other cops, like, do bad shit, like, bringing people out when they weren't actually, like, doing anything just because they were trying to get their arrest numbers up. So people that spoke out would get in huge, like, shit with the other cops. And then say you could be out on a call and, like, something really serious could be happening to you and you'd call for backup and no one would come. So that's the kind of shit Karen is concerned, like, would happen to her.
Okay, see, that's what I'm like. That's why it's not confusing in such a, it's almost like I'm being sarcastic when I say it's confusing. Like, if you and I were cops and we found out that Karen busted some guys who were being uncoply, would we be like, oh, no, there goes Karen. She, like, told on Branson and Mills who were arresting prostitutes if only to hassle them. You know what I mean? Like,
it doesn't make sense for me. And the only reason I was able to be like, okay, that makes sense is because I have, like, I specifically once listened to a podcast that talked about what happened when cops were, like, turning in fellow cops.
Right. So, like, I understand it. It's almost like, again, rhetorical. It's like, I get it, but it seems so ridiculous that, like, all cops would have this mindset. This is such a bizarre message.
Yeah. Dun dun. So Liv is now walking outside with Alex and asks her to drop the charges. Alex has this, like, beautiful red coat on that looks amazing on her. I'm sorry. I love the fashion this episode.
Fetching.
Cabot is, of course, outraged that Olivia's asking her to do this. And Olivia's like, listen, if we go through with this, Karen is going to become a target. And again, the problem with the show is they're not saying, like, what that means. And I'm just, like, insinuating based on, like, other things, like, I've heard.
Well, it's semi-intuitive, right? Like, yeah. Because they've already kind of told us in so many ways, like, you know, everyone, like, IAB, they don't even know why they're there yet. And they walk in and they're like, meh, rats, cheese.
I know. Where's, you know, here's your cheese, rats.
it's like, we get it, but it just seems like such a bizarre open secret to be proud of. We're like, yeah, it's going to suck when Karen gets murdered eventually by fellow cops for being associated with people who are trying to protect others.
I feel like I have an ending thought and we're almost, but I kind of want to say it now.
Yeah, do it, do it.
How is Olivia Benson fixing her mouth to like go to the diner and be like, well, I don't know why IAB are investigating me and Stabler. Like, we haven't done nothing wrong, so there's nothing for us to be afraid of. But at the same time, she's like, hey, rats, meep, 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 want some cheese in my desk? So I'm like, which is it, Olivia?
Really? Like, how is this okay? But it's not.
Well, so basically, I'm like, well, basically, Olivia points out to Cabot that if they just, like, back off on the whole rape thing, they're going to go away for so much longer for the drug stuff than if they go through with prosecuting for the rape. So in the end, they are going to get punished more severely. And Cabot's like, she's like, how is this justice? And Olivia's like, it sucks, but we're getting the better result in the end. And listen, I get it sucks, but we need to protect Karen and this is what she wants. So what do you want to do? And Cabot's like, okay, I'll go tell my boss and I will kind of like wink, wink, nudge, nudge him so he understands like what's going on. Well, dun, dun, Liv enters a diner to find Stabler just shoving food in his mouth. And
it's terrible work, actually.
And she's like, hey, thanks again for getting that cigarette for me. I know you really stuck your neck out for me, I guess. And he's like, thanks, praise makes me hungry, and then continues to just like shovel food into his mouth. And then finally we get they kind of like smile at each other weirdly, and then we find out Stabler doesn't have HIV. Yay, he lives to solve another case.
Yep, his appetite is back because he is no longer taking the anti-HIV drugs. It's because he doesn't have HIV. And then we executive producer Dick Wolf it.
Done.
Great. Dusted. Yeah. So
this wasn't my like favorite episode.
Just a lot of like,
I don't like questions. Conspiracy shit.
Every time we do one of these, also remember that it's very possible that I miss something. We miss something. So I'm guessing, I'm taking the four puzzle pieces and I'm hoping to put them all together now. So the reason why it was a problem for Karen's ex-husband to be in loan shark debt was because Karen is a field agent for IAB. So it doesn't look so great, even though it's her ex-husband, so I don't know why it's her fucking problem anymore, for someone affiliated with IAB to be in cahoots in some capacity with a loan shark. So they went and told Uncle Sammy, hey, you're going to forgive this debt because we told you so, and that's enough of that. And that was the only reason why that mattered. Because I kept being like, but why the fuck does it matter that her husband has a gambling problem if it's now not her husband?
Yeah, so that, I guess, was like a red herring that I didn't even really think about till now, because that really, it just like doesn't fucking mean anything.
It really doesn't matter. Like, I get while she was still married to him why it would have mattered, because it could look like she was the one paying him off.
And then, so if we go right back to the beginning, Murray's, and I know it's for us, but then going back, it makes no sense how Murray was acting at the beginning when he's like, Karen, where are you, Karen? It's like, okay, but like a legit, like, why did he do that?
He probably, I mean, I'm sure it was only for her to be like, oh, I heard him looking for me. But then again,
but they were
trying
to fucking kill her. So it's
they were trying to kill her. So, I guess maybe if there were like witnesses around. But again, this is all, the long and short of it is they had to make it look like they were innocent.
That was it, guys. There that you go. Paranoia. Yeah, nope. You're welcome.
Yeah. No notes. Well, I guess a lot of notes. But I worked them out. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in again. I'm so pumped we've been able to put out weekly episodes so far. Hopefully I don't jinx it.
I know. Hopefully there are no jobs or horses coming to get us.
God, men again.
You know how they're like, oh, there's not one thing. If it's not one thing, it's another. It's like, if it's not a job, there's a horse.
And this is what we'll take into the new year, even though we still have some time. Thanks again, squad. See you next time.
Bye, squad.
Bye.